You're listening to Aging in Alaska, a show created to explore the many aspects of aging and provide information, insight, guidance, and support to Alaska's elders and their families. Aging in Alaska is produced by the Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska, and I'm your host, Lisa Warzonek. It's estimated that around 20 million people in the United States are part of something called the Sandwich Generation, a group of people who find themselves sandwiched, in a sense, between two other generations, raising their children while also caring for an older loved one. Being a part of this group, caregivers can find to be both rewarding but also demanding. With us today to talk about her personal experiences as a Sandwich Generation caregiver is Marietta Hall. Marietta is caring for her 77-year-old mother, who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's over 2 years ago, while also raising her 4-year-old son and preparing for one more child on the way. Welcome, Marietta, and thanks for being with us.
Hi, Lisa.
So I just explained a little bit about the Sandwich Generation, but can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what that means, how you came to care for your mother and sort of, you know, what made you decide to take this on?
Yeah. Well, I have three other siblings in town, and my father passed away, and, you know, we were noticing my mother declining. She had been in and out of the hospital with depression issues and lack of sleep, and all, of course, looking back, we know was some, you know, earlier signs of Alzheimer's. And we were all willing to take care of her. Every one of us had, you know, would make space in our home. But with a young child, it actually made perfect sense for me because I tell you, a 2-year-old and a mother with Alzheimer's in the early stages is a wonderful mix. I mean, she would do those games over and over that a 2-year-old loves. And so for us, and she was also, you know, still very cognizant of, you know, her grandson and loved being around him. So, you know, it was a hard transition for her out of her house and to lose that independence, but to move into a house and be with her grandson every day, I think was, you know, it was an easy decision for all of us to look at and say, where's the best place for her?
Is this something that you had pictured for yourself prior to your mother being diagnosed?
I had pictured it. We were approaching it for a couple of years, so my husband and I had talked about it. I'm married the most incredible man on earth who adores my mother, you know, even through these are hard times. But we had talked about it, and we'd actually moved to a house. And as we were looking at houses, we're looking for a house with space where she could have, you know, really a place, some privacy. Mm-hmm. Along with a space for caregivers if we progress to that point that could also live there.
Okay. That's wonderful. It sounds like you have a very supportive family.
I do. And I think I'm unique. I know I've been to other Alzheimer's support groups, and I think I from the sound of other people's stories, I think I'm in a really lucky position.
Mm-hmm. Certainly family dynamics can play a huge part in caregiving, both positive and negative. So, Marietta, explain to us maybe what a typical day or week might look for you in caring for both a young child and your mother.
So, for us, I've taken one day off of work, so I now work 4 days a week. I have Mondays off. My husband works a 4-10 schedule. He has Fridays off. So, for the work week, I spend Mondays with my mother and my son, and I typically wake up, get the paper because that's what orients her to the day. So she uses the newspaper, which we didn't get before her moving in there, but it gives her the date and the day a week without her having to ask for it. So I like to slip her little clues that she doesn't have to kind of confront the issue that she's losing track of the day and the month. So I put the newspaper and her daily pills because she also, you know, there's a lot of independence loss that I don't feel like I need to cram into her face. So I put her pills out in the same spot every day so she still feels like she's taking them. You know, that's not that she's forgotten to take her pills or that I'm forcing her to, but whatever medication she's on, I like to put right beside her paper. And then, you know, get my son up, get ready for the day, and then my mom gets up a little bit later. I have to feed her because she's very, very functional, highly functioning, but she will not eat if I don't put the food in front of her. She knows how to make it. She could certainly, with direction, you know, make food, but she will never remember to do it. So get my son and my mother fed. And so Mondays are like a free day. On a work day, I have a sister that generally I put all this out, and I leave for work with my son, bring him to daycare. My mother hasn't woke up yet. My sister's there by late in the morning, and she picks her up and spends the day with her until I pick her up after I leave work. So those are the 3 days that there's nobody at home. And then on the fifth day, Friday, my husband does, we reverse roles, and he does all of that.
You know, Mariette, as you're talking, I'm just sort of struck at how easy you're making this sound, but I'm sure there's been some challenges and some transitions and some planning. Can you talk a little bit about how you came to this kind of schedule and the things that you might have gone through to get there?
You know, we didn't have a lot of planning. You really fly by the seat of your pants. They have these great classes. They kind of teach you to just keep your loved one in a state of contentment. You know, so some things we do probably from the outside seem contrived or manipulative, but we're just trying to keep her in a happy place. And there is no planning. We just, you know, one of the beautiful things about Alzheimer's is you can get it wrong, and in 5 minutes you can try again and get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just don't think things personal. You accept that you're going to mess up, and you just keep trying to do your best and figure out the way that your loved one is happiest. And you just, you don't kick yourself. It is hard. And we get it wrong a lot. And you just do your best. And I mean, really, you just have to let go of things and not take it personal. Like I said, you know, some anger reactions, you have to stop and say, is she tired? Is she hungry? You know, she's not angry at me. I mean, she's obviously angry at me, but that's not the root of it. And you learn. It's taken months and months and months to learn not to take things personal.
Well, and you mentioned classes. The Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska puts on a lot of classes. It sounds like you've taken some of these classes.
I've taken them, and my other brother. So I've got two brothers in town and a sister, and I have one brother and his girlfriend that took it with my husband and I, just because they wanted to know what to do when we needed support.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they have a caregiver's class mm-hmm. that we took.
That's wonderful, especially when families can hear all that information together. They can then plan together, use the same language, use the same strategies, the things that you've just been talking about.
Right. What we've found in our family is that we all have different roles. And so this, I have one brother who's, you know, he and his girlfriend took the class, and they're not, you know, as much as we all said, we're in this together. My husband and I are the primary caregivers. I mean, mm-hmm. it falls on us. You know, every night, if we wanted to have a night out, we've got to find a place for my mom and a place for my son. You know, they assume I don't mean any malice in this, but everybody goes on with their life. And when we call and we need help, they come over one night once a month, and it's the only night we get off, because mm-hmm. every other night we're responsible. And I'm glad that, you know, we're able to take that on. I've lost my train of thought there.
That's okay. I think you're describing what a lot of families go through, and you know, something that even when you have supportive family, they don't necessarily recognize that, you know, it'd be nice for them to call and say, hey, Marietta, we're thinking, why don't we take mom Thursday night so you guys can have that night out? You are still responsible for calling them, and they'll come right over.
Exactly.
But they're not really thinking.
They don't
hey,
think
maybe
of that
should...
in their everyday life.
Right, right.
So we found our roles are, you know, we're the primary caregivers. As much as they want to be part of their life, and they do sometimes call and spontaneously say, I'm going to take mom out. I've got one brother, and everything he says is correct. My mother believes everything he says. I can tell her 10 times and she'll doubt me. And everything he says, she'll do. And it's the brother that she sees the least.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting, because that's probably something that the past me would be really offended by. You know, you have a sibling rivalry, and here we talk about it. We sat in that mm-hmm. caregiver's class and said, well, here's the role you play, because if we're in a tough situation and you come over and I'll say, here's the deal and here's what I need you to say, he just comes over and says it, and she says, oh okay, and everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have to also kind of let that pettiness aside and
right.
recognize each role that we are to my mother and right. how we can help each other. So,
and what a valuable point.
He's incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
I mean, all my siblings are incredibly valuable, but, you know, I love that he can just take that on, accept that, like, I know what's going on. He'll walk in a situation, just take my word for it and roll.
Yeah. You know, you've mentioned some of the challenges of being the primary caregiver, being the ones responsible, you know, not having a lot of time for yourselves. Are there other challenges that you find, especially with this dual role of mother and caregiver?
You know, I think that I thought I would have more challenges with my mom's anger reaction and my child, And I don't. I think that children are so amazing. All of my nieces and nephews and my son especially, they just roll with it. Stuff that might bother me, and I think the root of it is that I see my mother that I used to know and what she's lost, and it makes me angry, and it makes her angry. But my son's only known her this way, so he never gets upset. And if he has to repeat things 6 times, that's totally normal to him. Mm-hmm. It's not frustrating to him at all. So for the mother, you know, being a mother and a caregiver, I haven't run into many challenges yet. Being the child, I think the challenge I have as a sandwich generation, where in a lot of situations a spouse might be taking care of their loved one, or she's in a nursing home situation, when this is my mother and I'm her child. I think one of the funniest ones is that she's now taking back everything she ever gave me in her life. You know, things that there were antiques, you know, that she passed down to me 20, 30 years ago. She now takes them and hides them in her room.
Because they're hers.
Well, she thinks I'm stealing from her. Yeah, right. And again, it's something I can't take personally, mm-hmm. because she's kind of regressing. So much longer term memories are clearer. And that includes things that she owned and has no memory of giving me,
right.
and therefore I'm stealing them.
Right.
And that's interesting as a child. Mm-hmm. I think that probably the sandwich generation, that's a unique thing, mm-hmm. when you're taking care of your parent.
Yes, that role reversal sometimes.
It's something you just have to smile at, you know. Yeah. It's not things I'm losing, but it gives her comfort to take them back. It gives her a feeling of power.
Sure.
And that's really important, because there's so much power she's losing, that being able to hide things in her room, you know, it's something that gives her something.
And as you're talking, that's such a great point that you make, that there is so much that they do lose. This is one of the things that we can still give them, is some sense of control.
Right. In every area, you know, where I can make her feel like she's in control, even though I might be doing it 6 times a day because she doesn't remember. I mean, there's, you know, it's probably making me feel better sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, but it is, you know, anytime I can give her, or even, you know, slightly deceive her into thinking that she's in control. Mm-hmm. I'll do it, you know. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just how we say something that gives that impression they're in control.
Right.
And so it can just be how we communicate with our loved ones.
Right. And again, if you think about Alzheimer's and a lot of those opportunities to mess it up, not berate yourself, mm-hmm. take a breath, wait the 5 minutes it's going to take for that situation to come up again, and then try again. And get it right. And then you kind of learn it's something they might be fixated on. And they're going to ask you over and over whether you got it right the first time or not. But it's about you feeling like you made them feel more comfortable. You find just the right answer.
Right.
And then you give it to them every time they need it until they're done fixating on that thing.
Right. Such a good point. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Aging in Alaska, and we're talking today with Marietta Hall, who is a caregiver for both her 77-year-old mother and a 4-year-old child, something that we call the sandwich generation. So we talked a little bit, Marietta, about the challenges. Tell us about some of the rewards that you see from your situation.
Rewards. I think that I see the best part of my mother. And, you know, my siblings, they don't see that. Because I'm at my house. She's in her routine. She's in her most comfortable place. When they want to pick her up for dinner, or take her to their house for the day and their kids get to see her, her routine's interrupted and she's a little more crabby, you know, just a little more disjointed. And so I think that in her lifetime, I'm getting the best of it. Mm-hmm. And I think my son is getting the best of it. And it's part of why we all decided it was a good fit, because all the other kids have known her without the disease. You know, my son, this is the best he's going to get. And so, yeah, I think I get the best of my mother.
Do you have conversations with your son? He's now 4. So are you guys able to talk a little bit about grandma and what she's going through? Or like you say, does he just kind of go with it and it doesn't really matter?
We've had a little bit of conversations about, you know, Nana might not remember that. And, you know, he's just so incredibly open and forgiving. And, you know, she'll get angry with him sometimes, you know, over something. I go tell him to pour himself a glass of juice. She sees him and runs in and says, "You can't do that." You know, we don't have to. At 4, he's just, you know, he's just not that upset about it. We have had conversations with the other, my other nieces and nephews, mm-hmm. who are older, and you know, they'll sometimes be joking with Nana, and then all of a sudden she forgets that it's a joke and she actually gets angry. You know, if it's kind of play acting where they're fighting back and forth, she forgets that it's a joke. So they've had conversations. But again, even my 15-year-old niece, you know, is just incredibly forgiving, and she gets what's going on, you know, and she loves her Nana, you know, and she remembers that there's more to her than this disease. Mm-hmm. But that's what we talk about, is something that makes you upset, that's the disease, that's not Nana.
Lessons that we can learn from our children.
They are, yeah. I didn't realize it coming into this. That's probably another good thing, mm-hmm. is how incredible my nieces and nephews are. You know, how their relaxation with her, you know, how I can really learn from that.
You talked about your mom's routine and how it might get disrupted when other siblings come over. And, of course, they want to spend time. Do you feel that the situation you decided with her living with you, is this better for your mother? Were there other situations that you considered before making this decision?
There wasn't anything else we considered, because she was at a stage where she still really needed to be around family. Mm-hmm. So I have tried adult daycare, mm-hmm. and she refuses to go there. I've also tried some caregivers during the day while I've been gone. In the first year that she was at my house, my oldest sister actually got breast cancer. And that was that's another thing with Alzheimer's, is life goes on and other things happen in your family that are incredibly traumatic. And that was one of them. She was my main relief. So we tried caregivers, and she locked them out of the house. So outside right now, you know, for her, she wants family around her. She doesn't want anyone outside of family. And I'm hoping to honor that until, you know, there'll be a point when she doesn't recognize me. Right. And we might be able to get other help. But if we can, you know, honor that, you know, her just wanting to be around her own family, we will, for as long as we can.
Sure, sure. What are some of the stresses that you feel with your role as caregiver, and what do you do to alleviate those stresses? We talk about being healthy caregivers, and on occasion, you're a mother, you're a caregiver, you're a daughter, you're a wife. At some point, you kind of need to say, I need a little time for myself. What are some things that you do to help yourself?
Well, we're only 2 years into this, so I think we haven't gotten that really. I think that's something we're lacking, because right now, my main relief when I'm at my wit's end is my husband. Mm-hmm. So actually, my sister and I have developed a code word because she's with her the 3 days a week. So we have, magenta is our code word. So if during the process of the phone call she gets the word magenta out, it means I'm at my wit's end. You need to come and get mom. I have to have relief. She's got her own 4 small children.
Sure.
And my husband and I kind of have a code where I can go in the back room and shut the door, mm-hmm. and he takes over. And so far, we're pretty good at, you know, if I need the relief, he can just take over and give me time to myself. But we need time together, mm-hmm. and that's what we're lacking. We don't have a good plan to have regular time as a family with my son, and then time for us as a couple.
Sure. It sounds like you're on the right path, though, by establishing code words, by having healthy conversations about what you need, and hopefully you'll move forward to find plans to have your own family time, too.
Yeah. It's going to be a whole new dynamic with a new baby coming in July, too.
Sure. That's going to be another big change. Have you spoken to your mother about that change?
You know, I have. I had suspected for a while that she didn't remember from day to day that I was pregnant when I was first pregnant. And I worried that when it became obvious I was pregnant, she would just keep telling me I was fat. And fortunately, she's actually, you know, totally recognized that it's a pregnancy. And she's, you know, so she recognizes in that day,
right,
depending on what I'm wearing, or I'll just throw her a clue, you know, like, well, you know, when the new baby comes in July, and I'll pat my stomach, and then she looks and sees my stomach, and then she's like, right, she starts talking about it. But she doesn't have any long-range ability, you know, to think past today and the fact that I'm pregnant today. Mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't retain it long enough. You know, so I don't know if in a given day she starts thinking about that.
What's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's something, you make a good point. A lot of people can understand things in the now or in the day, in the moment. They may not remember a decision they made because of the short-term deficit.
Right.
But they can still have a conversation. They can still actually make a decision. They just may need our assistance in remembering or sort of following up on those things.
Right, right. She's, you know, and you know, that is a tempting thing when you're a caregiver because you get so frustrated having the same conversation and, you know, this is my baby and my plans and I don't want to have the same conversation with you every day. But we sit and have conversations about what to name the baby.
Mm-hmm.
That it's my husband and I, it's our policy to not tell people. But of course, we can tell my mother because she won't retain
she won't
it
remember.
To spill the beans to my siblings. So that's fun. We sit around the dinner table and we all have conversations about what to name the baby, which for us is including her in the process. I don't know how much she's retaining. It can get tempting to kind of cut the person you're caring for out of that stuff
mm-hmm.
because it's, you know, this deep, meaningful conversation for you. And, you know, so that is a conscious effort to make sure we're still, you know, including her in the really important stuff, even if she's not going to retain it.
And I think it's important, the point that you're making, too, is that level of engagement and connection. It's something that, I think our listeners hopefully know or can understand that people with Alzheimer's or some type of dementia can still make connections.
Right.
They may not remember your name. They may not, you know, remember where you're from or where they're at. But if you have eye contact, if you engage and touch, if you engage in some level of connection with them, you know, they still can have those conversations. They can still provide advice. They can still
right.
be engaged with you. It just might not be, you might have, like you said, the same conversation the very next day.
Right, right.
Yeah. So have you found anything surprising from this arrangement, from your sandwich generation situation? Anything surprising at all?
Boy, other than finding all of my stuff in her room, there's been some surprising things there. Not all my stuff, but gosh, surprising. No, it's...
When you first saw how your son was interacting with her, were you concerned maybe in the beginning on how that would work? And then when he's been so wonderful and understanding and kind of going with it, not that that necessarily would be surprising, but... probably had a question of wondering how that might work.
Yeah, I think I had a fear that her anger, you know, might, because, you know, that's not my mother. She was never an angry person mm-hmm. or a mean person. And there are streaks of meanness in Alzheimer's patients, you
mm-hmm.
know, because you're, you know, they're suddenly angry. I mean, I can't imagine when I step back what that must be like to be losing all those moments, you know, and then have someone tell you that you already decided this or, you know, how she got to my house. Sometimes she gets forgetful of how she got to my house. So I worried that some of that anger would be expressed towards my son.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any, I'm not surprised that kids, intellectually, I knew that kids could roll with this. I think it surprises me how much my mother interacted, how much she enjoyed interacting with
mm-hmm.
her, how much some of the very things that make Alzheimer's frustrating made her such a great playmate.
Right.
To a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old. I can't wait to see her with a new baby, actually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think she'll do really, really well.
Great. Do you have some advice for our listeners that may find themselves in this situation or considering bringing a loved one into their home when they have small children?
I think, like I said, our motto is, well, don't take it personal.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take it personal. And third, don't take it personal. Just... you know, remember when you're angry that that's the disease and that your loved one that you love is still there and separate that. I mean, go ahead and be angry
mm-hmm.
at the disease and the, you know, what that person's lost. But remember that it's your loved one and that somewhere in there, they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever they do, you just have to, and it's a learned process. It's so easy to say. And in every day I get challenged with taking a breath and saying, okay, this isn't, you know, anger towards me. What's going on? Is she tired? Is she hungry? Is she, you know, disoriented? You know, address. And I also try and say, you know, boy, that would really make me angry too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just not engage anger with anger, which can be very tempting. But engage anger with, I would feel exactly like you feel.
Validation.
Right at this moment. Yeah. What else is going on? And just, you know, kind of absorb that role with the anger. Let her experience it. And sometimes she's just angry. That's not going to do any good. But then take a breath And 5 minutes, there can be a reset too. So just don't let the moment build into anything more than the moment that it is.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Did you find the education and support from the Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska, do you find that education piece helpful to sort of get you to that point?
I found it really helpful, especially hearing from other families. I mean, the leaders of the exercises, they have excellent points. I mean, they really know what they're doing there. Mm-hmm. I think they gave us a lot of, you know, not caution, but just, you know, sounds like things are going really well. Just be prepared for other, you know, like this is where things can develop. Mm-hmm. So it's not a dread thing. We just knew that, you know, in some areas things are going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That's part of what you've taken on. So I think that Alzheimer's employees, they really know the progress of the basic disease. And that's really helpful. So you're not kind of swept off your feet by something. And then the other caregivers in the room are incredibly, just to hear their experience, hear something they've done. I walked out of those meetings and took exactly what they said and tried it at home that night. Mm-hmm. You know, just techniques that we used.
It sounds like that peer support is extremely valuable.
Yeah, although that caregivers class, it's not really a peer support group.
Right.
And we haven't done one of those. I think I haven't gone to one, and I'm sure it would be valuable. But you still throw out advice.
Right.
You know, peer support on top of that would be even better.
Right. Well, we are just about out of time, so I have one last quick personal question. I don't know if you'll trust us with the information, but what are you having?
I'm having a boy.
Oh, congratulations.
And we're referring to him as Wolverine. My 4-year-old wants to name him Wolverine, which won't happen. But for now, we're referring to him as Wolverine.
Okay. Well, that is our show today. We want to thank Marietta Hall for being with us and sharing some very valuable points. And please stay tuned for next time as we continue to explore the many aspects of aging here at home in Alaska. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Aging in Alaska. Aging in Alaska is produced by the Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska. Music is generously provided by Bumua. Visit us on the web at alzalaska.org.